Welcome to the Monkey House. It's me here in the year 2024, and I'm about to be in Sydney and Brisbane. Sydney from the 8th to the 12th of May, Brisbane from the 16th to the 19th of May, doing my show Dryer Dryer at the respective comedy festivals in those cities. But I'm also, while I'm up there, I figured I had a couple of days to kill, so I'm doing a Who Knew It with Matt Stewart on Monday, the 13th of May at the Chippendale Hotel, and in Brisbane at Good Chat Comedy on the 14th of May. And you can get tickets for all of that. Now, go to mattstewartcomedy.com for the links. mattstewartcomedy.com. Now, on with the show.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Welcome to Primates, the podcast where we explore primates in popular culture from chimpanzee all the way down to chimpanzee. I'm your host, Matt Stewart, and I'm joined by the always special, always happening and happy-go-lucky second banana of the show and host of the gaming show about games, gaming. It's Mr. Evan Munro-Smith.
That's me. Happy-go-lucky. What does happy-go-lucky mean?
Happy-go-lucky.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. Happy-go-lucky. I mean, I think it means sort of happy and going with the flow, but I don't know for sure. That's how I meant it.
Oh, okay. Look, I think that's apt.
You're a real happy-go-lucky lad and banana.
Yeah.
Hey, we're back again. This is sort of the third season in a way, even though it's kind of also just the second season still. Because we're still talking about the Umbrella Academy, but now we're talking about the Umbrella Academy season 2.
Yep.
Which is fun.
It's exciting.
I just watched the episode, and
oh, good.
I'm looking forward to talking about it. I did watch this just before we started recording the first season, but again, I fucking loved it all over again and couldn't remember nearly any of it. So it was great.
Yeah, it is a great episode and lots happens.
Such a great start. I guess they're able to get stuck right into it, assuming that everyone who's watched season one.
Yeah. I think you'd be pretty confused if you were starting with this episode.
They're able to jump right in, which I guess I reckon my vibe from you was your least favorite of the first season was the first episode.
Yeah, it was a slow start, but it's just how it is often with first episodes, is that it kind of has to start slow because it's got a lot of heavy lifting to do.
Yeah, it's got to build the foundation.
This does not.
When you see a house being built, you're like, oh, look how boring that slab is. Oh, they're pouring a slab.
That is true.
But the paint,
it's not interesting.
And the interior
once
design,
the walls go in.
Yeah,
yeah. Like once you start seeing walls go in, and you can kind of step into a room. That's when building the house gets exciting.
Yeah, you're like, well, look, it's got a pool and a tennis court. I don't know whose house this is. Probably one of the actors from the show. This episode is called Right Back Where We Started. So seeing before watching, I'm like, oh, they are going to redo season one. I thought they were just going to land back in time 6 days or 7 days or whatever. But that is not what they did.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the title since watching the episode, but I get it.
Instead, they really went back, about six decades instead?
Wait. Yeah. Is it
almost
The season one that we talked about, is that's set in what we would call the present day?
Yeah, I think it says 2019.
Oh, because they're born in 1989. Okay, yeah, cool. It's just a weird sort of out-of-time version of that. due to the, you know, with the technology stuff. Yeah, so this one, it starts with a narrator doing a bit of a recap of what happened at the end of season one, which of course was
Is the narrator Pogo?
Oh, good question. I was wondering who it was. It sounded like a familiar voice, but I wasn't. Maybe it is.
Let me search for that. What? And while you tell, remind me, where was the first season? Was it in Dallas? Because they're in Dallas now.
That's a good question. Where are they? Yeah,
they weren't always in Dallas, were they? Were they?
I'm trying to think of. This is one of these things I should have in my head. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember it being important, really.
No.
Location.
Filmed in Toronto. That's okay. Useful.
Oh yeah, that because that that motel is in. It's in bloody Canada.
Yeah. Bloody Canada.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure some if we don't figure that out before the end of this episode, I'm sure some helpful listeners will fill us in.
It's definitely not super important.
No.
But it's still an interesting question as to whether they are where they were or whether this is they've also traveled a great distance.
Yeah, because that means it makes it even more random that they would land here. But is it, or is it by design? And I guess maybe that's something we find out as it goes along, because it's a pretty big coincidence that they land in Dallas just before the JFK assassination, which happens in Dallas, right?
Yeah.
The grassy the key knoll thing, so is it, in Dallas.
Yeah. But of course, they don't all just land there, right? So we start with Klaus and Ben, who sort of come crashing down like Five did in season one when we first saw, you know, his first appearance, crashing down from like a black hole, sort of a vortex-y sort of a situation.
Yeah, lightning-y
A rip in space-time. And so, yeah, Klaus and Ben are the first that we see coming down. They land in an alleyway in Dallas, as you say, in February 1960. And then we see Allison is the next. She lands in that very same alleyway, but in 1961. And then Luther lands in 1962.
Yep.
We see as they're landing, we see that a sneaky photographer is papping them as they land, just getting some shots. And we see Diego lands in 1963. And then we see... because not all of them have dates, but Vanya lands in October of 1963. I assume that's later than when Diego lands.
Yeah, they do it in chronological order. It's like a month later, I think.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So they're all obviously fairly confused. Vanya is particularly disoriented, which is fair enough.
I think she can, and she kind of hits her head on the way down as well and then
and
gets
hit by
a car.
So
a couple
yeah,
of
I don't
reasons
blame
why she's a bit disoriented.
Yeah,
but they're fun. I mean, they're all fun little scenes. So, firstly, Klaus has Ben there to bounce it off, which makes it kind of smart that they were the first ones to drop there, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're the two that help us figure out what year it is. And they might even ask, does one of them even ask the question? Not where, but when.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they
and
go
there's
find
a guy
a
on the street. They ask a guy on the street, like, what year is it? And of course, they don't answer because. I mean, I would answer, probably, maybe. I think I would.
Yeah, I think I would too.
I wouldn't be so weirded out by the question. You know, these things happen. People travel through time.
But it does feel like you're about to be punked. What's your... Now you're just power... What's the trick? Am I being tricked here?
Yeah.
I don't want to be stitched up on live on TV. This could be live on TV, as far as you know.
But that they find out that it's February 1960 by finding a magazine in a trash can.
Yes.
I would hope that they then back that up with something else because people could just be throwing out old magazines.
Yeah, that's right. They might have just
like,
been outside
like
an antique magazine store.
Yeah, well, yeah. Rather than being at like a newsstand and picking up today's paper, that's what the date is.
That's
no, it's just an old
It could
magazine.
Have been like 5-year-old magazine. It could be late 60s for all they knew. Then Allison drops. I can't really remember how she drops, but I remember Luther coming down and oh no, Allison comes down and and goes into a shop, doesn't she? And they point to a thing saying she's not allowed to be in there because she's black.
Yes.
And it was like, oh, fucking hell. And then Luther comes down and he has more of a comical scene where he starts yelling out Allison's name. And there's a man standing next to him who just gets in on it with him. They both start yelling out Allison in unison, which is a bit of fun.
I like that, yeah.
Then Then Diego drops down. He's the only one who makes it look really elegant. He does a Superman land. Superhero land where, you know, where they do the big jump and do that sort of frog squat.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he straight away fills a crime. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, Vanya comes down and she gets run over instantly. So they all do a little bit. Oh, and then Five, of course, he's maybe the most important of all. He comes down only a couple of months after Vanya. And
he lands in November, so it's
month after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember what date in October Vanya was, but
between 1 and 2 months after.
Weeks. Let's say weeks.
Yeah.
And the Soviets are attacking. This is some sort of war on the streets of Dallas. I don't know. I'm not American, so I was like, was there a Soviet war? I don't think there was a war in 1963.
How full on did the Cold War get? I thought the cold part meant that it wasn't like an open battle.
Maybe
it just happened in winter.
I was relieved to see that Five was just as confused as I was,
right?
As to why the Soviets were there.
And then it became like, it felt like an Avengers scene. All the Hargreaves family were in superhero mode. Firstly, we see Vanya, white eyes and everything, full white violin, and just using the force to smash a bomb away or a missile or something.
The force.
And then who else do we see? We see
Klaus with an army of the dead, which is pretty cool.
And they rip through everyone. This opening scene or these scenes could be the whole episode. It was wild. Yeah, what a hot so start to a season.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, the whole time I'm in the bath going,
of course.
For new listeners, I watch it in the bath. Whoa, whoa. I make a lot of those sort of things. Oh, my God. Then Luther comes in and does an even bigger superhero landing, but he just sort of smashes the ground. And then I think he gets shot in the back by a missile and it doesn't really affect him.
Yeah.
Is that what happens?
I think
that's pretty sick. And then Allison this is probably the biggest reveal of all of it. Allison goes to three enemy members. I heard a rumor. So it's the first time that she fully got it out in the from what we'd seen apart from flashbacks.
Yeah, as an adult.
I blew your minds. And their brains all melted out their heads.
Yeah. So it's amazing.
We thought she could just manipulate people's actions, but it sounds like it's closer to the comic books than we realize, and she can actually change reality.
Yeah, which is that's pretty amazing.
Oh, that was wild. Yeah,
and also amazing that she can speak. That's great.
Oh, and then we saw, of course, Ben was up on a rooftop with his octopus coming out his stomach.
Yeah,
also creating havoc as he likes to do. I don't know if he likes to do it. Maybe it's just a job for him.
I guess so.
And then Five comes in, right?
Oh, yeah, Five.
And
what does
he's,
Five do
he's
here?
Grabbed. Well, he's just arrived.
Oh, right. I was going to say, we also see Diego,
who has
the power of the beard, is what I gather.
Ah, so
he has a beard now.
Right, and still got the longer hair?
Yeah, he looks quite different.
So what does he do?
Yeah. I don't think he does.
What does he do in the battle?
I don't think he does anything special.
Just throws a knife or something?
That's what he does.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure he did something cool. Everyone else did the coolest thing they've ever done in the show. And it all happened like moment after moment. So it was just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It was pretty fun.
It was really cool.
Yeah. It was a great scene.
Great to see.
And so then Five is walking into the middle of this like going, what the fuck is going on? And our man, bloody... What's his name?
Hazel arrives, and he
only
also
looking
has the
like
power
Santa
of the
Claus.
Beard.
Yeah, he's all white haired and bearded, and he grabs him and he says, "We got to get out of here."
And then he zaps him back 8 days in time, is it?
I think it was 10 days.
10 days in time.
Just as nukes were destroying Dallas. Yes. Along with the Umbrella Academy. They're so, still called the Umbrella Academy, aren't they? Or the Hargreaves, whatever you want to call them. So they zap using the power of a briefcase 10 days prior. Where did... this doesn't matter. I was going to ask, where did Hazel get a briefcase? But that's probably not important right at the minute.
Yeah, wait, didn't he use the briefcase to... Didn't he at the end of the last one, remember?
Of course.
You were the one who noticed it. It was one tucked away. And then Donut Lady Agnes zapped away to a better place and time to live out their retirement.
For some reason, I thought Cha-Cha had it. But no, he nicked it.
Nah, Cha-Cha was obliterated by the moon explosion.
Bye-bye, Mary
Jesus
J.
would be
Blige.
Confusing if people did just jump in. So... So Hazel is like, he explains that him and Agnes lived a happy 20 years, but she had just died of cancer. He said, we had a great time, but the apocalypse is coming again.
I know.
I guess this is why it's back where we started, because it's a week
it's
out.
It's the same. It's basically the same story. The apocalypse is going to happen and we have 10 days to stop it sort of thing.
Five's asking Hazel, should I think, when all of a sudden we see him way before they do, but their three blonde men are getting off a bus and they look ominous. Yeah. There's a real ominous feel about them. And they're coming towards
thugs.
Them. And we get like full shots of them while Hazel and Five are still talking. And then they notice them basically as they're opening fire on them. So Five can't get any more answers. And unfortunately, Hazel just slipped something into his pocket. Do we know what he slipped into his pocket?
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
Oh, maybe. Am I making that up? I thought he slipped something into his pocket and he gave him
into
the briefcase.
Into Five's pocket?
Yeah, into Five's pocket.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't notice
and
that at all.
And he said, what did he say? He said go, I guess. He said run. And so he sort of, he space jumped a little just out of the line of fire, but Hazel got... killed, as far as we can tell. People have come back from death before, but it looks like that's the end of Hazel, which is a sad moment. So quick into the season,
but noble for him to save Five.
Yeah, he didn't need to do that. He lived out his happy retirement, but that was a nice thing. And Five just gets away, but the suitcase has been shot up. Got blue glowing bullet holes, and he says, "I told him to make it bulletproof."
So I wonder if that. I guess that means it's broken now.
Yeah, I think
Five doesn't carry it with him from then on. So I guess that's.
I feel
it
like
for that.
They needed to do a few things here. They needed to give Five enough information about the impending apocalypse, but they also they needed to explain how Hazel got there. But they also needed to not allow Five to go back in time. Easily again.
Yes.
So that's why they got rid of the suitcase.
All these plot points.
Yeah.
Narrative devices. So that all checks out. So Five is so now Five is 10 days prior to that day, which was November in 1963. So I guess we're still in either November, October 1963, whatever that it was.
Yep. So all of the family are there, but they've just been there for different amounts of time. Five just arrived. And then varying times all the way back to the most established is bloody Klaus and Ben, who've been there for about 3 years or so.
Mm. So Five winds up talking to this this sort of alien conspiracy buff.
Yes.
How did he
notices, so he looks up and notices he is just closing his blinds. And then, so he's like, oh, this guy was watching me. Then he looks up on the roof and there's heaps of satellite dishes and stuff. He's like, this is connected somehow. So he goes up and he space jumps into his house after telling him he's there to sell Encyclopedia Britannicas or something. and then he looks on the wall. He notices he's a conspiracy theorist. So he sort of plays into that a bit and tells him, I need information. And he says, I've been watching... And he he goes, I reckon this guy looks like... So he goes, I've seen all these things happen and all these people arrive, and I saw you arrive.
Yeah, so it's this guy's the we find out here is the guy that's been photographing them as they've arrived in the alley.
Yeah.
Which is a heck of a coincidence.
And it's explained because he was worked at a shop downstairs. He saw a flash of light the first time, so he went up and he saw someone come through, and then he became instantly obsessed with it and was just sitting there waiting for a year for the next one, and then another year. And then a few months or whatever, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, but he...
Dedicated guy.
He noticed that Diego looked a lot like a guy who'd been arrested, and that's because it was Diego. So Five was able to go talk to Diego in prison.
Yeah, so Diego's in... I guess he's in this sort of group therapy situation. Finally getting the therapy they probably all need at this stage. Except he's not really...
he's not in it. And it must be hard because the therapist doesn't accept his real life, right? He doesn't accept that he has superpowers and all that sort of stuff. So I don't think a therapist can really work when they don't have the full story or they don't accept the full story. If they think a big part of you is not true, and you're like, no, it is true, then I don't really see how that therapy could work all that well. Not that I'm some therapy expert, but that doesn't...
Yeah, that way would be sense, that would be difficult. You need openness and honesty and understanding for therapy to work, I believe.
Yeah.
And then there's a scene which is, I don't know if you've seen Terminator 2 recently, but it's a classic Terminator, basically the same as the scene in Terminator 2.
Right.
Where
I haven't seen Terminator 2.
What?
Yeah, so I...
Oh, man.
I'm sure I've seen bits of it. Like the where he gets frozen up in the gas or whatever and his legs break off.
Yep.
And maybe when he says, I will be back here soon or something like that, some classic.
Something like that, yeah. It's one of those. There's...
get out of here, baby. It's one of another lines I remember.
Sarah Connor from Terminator 1 is in therapy.
Oh, she's in there. Up. Oh, no, she wasn't in this scene. No.
Not in this scene, no. I'm just saying there's
like,
there's
wow,
a scene...
I really missed that reference.
There is a scene in Terminator 2 where Sarah Connor is in an asylum sort of a situation, and the therapist doesn't believe that the world is going to end, that Terminators exist. He's like, no, that's crazy. And she's playing along with it. She's like, I get it. You know, I'm feeling much better now. All these delusions have started to fade away, and I think I might be ready to be released soon. Do you think I might be ready to be released soon? And then the doctor, what's his name? He's great. Is like, yeah, well, you know, you are doing really well. You're showing real progress, and we'll reassess it in, you know, like maybe 6 months. And she's like, 6 months. You see, and she breaks.
Right.
And
that's too long. The world's gonna end by then.
Yeah.
Which is what he says. He said 90 days. That's too long.
Yeah. So it's really
So that's clearly
basically the same
sort of
I don't know whether it's a conscious thing.
It's
yeah,
gotta
whether
be conscious.
It's a conscious thing or not.
That's a very big film. Someone on the production would have noticed.
Maybe. But it's the same vibe that they don't believe Diego. He's trying to play along so that he'll get released, But it's not to be so.
But he's
but
not
he gets
saying
a visitor.
Because of the end of the world. He's saying because he's trying to save Kennedy. He's like, someone's going to shoot Kennedy. So this is, again, this is like, this is, he knows this is truth, but they think he's deluded.
Mm. Yes. And then Five arrives to visit, has obviously tracked him down at this asylum sort of a place. And we find out here that Diego was arrested because he was outside Lee Harvey Oswald's house. He was going to try and, I guess, kill Lee Harvey Oswald?
Mm.
Or at least stop him from assassinating JFK, right?
Yeah, maybe he was going to go around and just be like, hey, how cool's JFK? It'd be a real shame if anything ever happened to him. I think he's a great guy. He's actually... my uncle, and he gave me a present, and he's real nice. So, yeah, just thought you should get the full picture. Maybe he was going to try something like that, so a softly approach.
Yeah, that, you know, that could work. So, I guess Diego's thinking Five's going to get him out. So Diego's talking about he wants to, that Five is talking about the apocalypse coming up. Diego seems to be bent on saving JFK.
Yeah.
I don't know why Diego is bent on that, but then he also says he wants to go back in time again, further back, and take care of Hitler while he's at it.
Yeah.
I think Diego is just on some sort of a crusade to stop all the horrors of history.
Yeah. He says, well, and that's what people are saying, he's got a hero complex. That's what they're saying in the thing. When that daddy issues and a hero complex. And both of those things may be true as well.
Almost certainly.
But he, it must have felt like fate, because he arrived. When he arrived, he looked up and Kennedy was doing his famous speech. Ask what not time. What you can do for your country or whatever. He's doing it live on a TV in a shopfront window. So he was like, well, this is my path. It must have felt like it.
That's fate. A sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because Diego's bent on that stuff, Five, I guess, decides that he's not particularly useful at the moment, I guess. And rather than sort of, freeing him, if he even has the power to do that, probably not. But instead of helping him.
He could have. I mean, he was able to take him 50 years back in time. I reckon he could have jumped him through the bars.
Yeah. Yes, he could have done that, obviously, with powers or something. But I don't think he could have convinced them to release him, you know what I mean?
But he did the opposite of that. He told him that he's trying to escape, and they sedated him. And but then he whispered in his ears as he was being knocked out. He said, "I'll be back for you now. Sleep tight," or something like that.
Yeah, not much comfort, I imagine, for poor Diego.
No.
And then we see what Vanya is up to. She's sort of at this family home and just surprisingly normal. So we're not exactly sure what's going on there. I guess blowing up the moon is cathartic. And she's sort of blown off for steam and she's fine now. I don't know. We don't get a lot of information here. I guess her family has taken her in. They talk about her, I think they've put out a missing persons ad for her. So I guess the story here is that she's, suffering memory loss. She doesn't.
And I figured, because she hit her head and got knocked by the car, unless this is, she's just like, I don't know where I am. This is my best option to survive. Yeah.
We don't know whether.
If I tell them the true story, I'm going to end up in there with Diego. So maybe she's like, it's smarter to just say, I don't remember anything. And that way, you don't even have to come up with a story. You just have to commit to not remembering.
Yeah.
But she would have had to have come up with that pretty quickly, though. So it feels more likely that she has just lost her memory to me.
Yeah, that seems to be what's going on, unless we see otherwise.
Yeah.
And she's not, like, seems very normal and, you know, she's not white. All that sort of stuff.
Yeah, she seems real chilled out. She's just helping out around the house. She's just been a really good house guest. I mean, she feels like she's very lucky to have been let into this family and welcomed in. Basically, it seems like a cousin or a relative. It's what it feels like.
Yeah.
So that was kind of nice. But the mum that she's staying with seems really cool. The kids doesn't say a lot, but the dad talks way too much. And you're like, he's just like a cliched salesman. And you're like, we're not meant to like this guy very much, I don't think.
I guess she hasn't been there very long either. She's only been there a matter of weeks because, again, she landed in October.
Yes.
And it's either October or November in the same year. So she's, I guess, settled in pretty quickly in this family.
Yeah, the salesman dad, says something like, hey, so no one's still called about you? Put another ad in the paper. And then she says something like, yeah, I guess I'm just not the kind of person people miss.
Yeah.
And the mum, the lovely mum, says something like, hey, we'd be missing you already. So the dad's an a-hole and the mom's a legend. I'm seeing that Pogo, Adam Godley's in this episode voice only. So I reckon he was the narrator.
Oh, yeah, it must be. Because, yeah, we don't see Pogo.
How's he narrating? Otherwise. I guess he's just narrating from the afterlife or something.
From the afterlife, yeah. Maybe through Klaus?
Oh, yep. Yep. That makes sense. got a narrating gig through Klaus.
Yeah, I also guess that, yeah, right. Because the other thing is Vanya, but, you know, by them putting out a missing persons ad, is advertising that she's there to everyone else. But I guess none of them have seen that. Otherwise, they maybe would have tried to get in touch with her or at least suss out what she's doing.
Sorry, just to have another sidetrack. I've just found an article on cheatsheet.com. It says, many fans of the Umbrella Academy are unclear about where and when the Netflix series takes place. According to the creators of the series, that's the way fans are supposed to feel. So it's just,
okay.
It's just
we were right to be confused. Great. We're playing right into their hands.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, okay, so we see Klaus and Five. What are they up to? They're on the road to Dallas. We don't know where they've been. But they, as you say, they've been here the longest, right?
Well, according to the fandom synopsis of this episode, I thought it said they were coming from San Francisco, but that might not be right.
Ben wants to go to San Francisco.
Oh, that's I saw.
But Klaus is going to Dallas. We don't know why. Klaus has a bold new look with a bit of a beard sort of thing happening. And
he looks kind of, like a, I don't know, what does he look like? It's like a plaited beard. It's a real stylized look, whatever it is. It's sort of a, I can't quite put my finger on it, but.
Kind of like a 60s, maybe a spiritual sort of thing, but I'm not really sure.
Mike Myers in The Guru, that facial hair he had, but not as...
Oh, that was a bad film.
I never saw it, but I believe it's rated as one of the worst of all time.
There is one good joke and the rest of the film is garbage.
Okay, what's a good joke?
Mariska Hargitay. Mariska Hargitay. That's a very good joke. It makes me laugh every time.
What does it mean?
He's the love guru and his... the thing that he says, his like little mantra thing when he says he greets people and everything, he says Mariska Hargitay. That's his sort of his mantra. But Mariska Hargitay is an actress. She plays the lead in Law and Order SVU.
Oh.
It's just her name. And she has a cameo in the film. He goes up to her and he says, Mariska Hargitay, Mariska Hargitay. It's very funny.
Okay.
It makes me laugh. Okay. where were we? So their car breaks down. Ben and Klaus are driving to Dallas. Their car breaks down. Ben is saying he has some sort of unfinished business in San Francisco. Right. He needs to go there. We don't know why. At least I don't think we know why Klaus is going. He says back to Dallas. I'm not sure why.
They've been in the 60s for 3 or so years. So they've been to both San Francisco and Dallas.
Yeah.
Well, they've definitely been to Dallas because that's where they arrived.
Yeah, yeah. Not a lot of information there. But there's also this thing where it does seem like Klaus is giving Ben physical form, I suppose, because when they're talking about this, you know, Ben wants to go to San Francisco, Klaus wants to go to Dallas. They said they can't go their separate ways because Ben is reliant on Klaus to, like, he's stuck with Klaus basically.
Right.
And then they sort of have a brawl, which again is like in that season one where they're able to physically make contact. So I thought maybe Ben is now just a regular person basically as long as he's around Klaus. However,
we find out that's not the case soon after, don't we?
Yeah, because a car drives past and we see that Klaus, at least from the outside perspective, is wrestling with himself. So Ben is still invisible to other people, but he is able to physically make contact with Klaus. So it's still a bit unclear what the rules are here. But anyway, so their car's broken down. They're on foot. They go to this pub and the publican says that the next bus to Dallas is tomorrow, 3 o'clock tomorrow. So they got a bit of time to kill. Klaus plays poker with some shady dudes.
Yeah, he's invited
in the pub.
Into the game. They clearly see an easy target there, not realizing that he has a ghost who can help him cheat.
Yeah.
So Ben stands
but it sort
behind,
of eventuates.
He's standing behind them looking at their cards while Klaus is playing.
Yes.
But somehow he's still losing all. He's like, that's all the money I've got. So he's losing anyway, right? Or he's all in at least.
Well, Ben fucks over Klaus here because Ben's like, he says what the hand is, and then
he says he's bluffing.
What poker is,
but already the guy goes, let's make it more interesting. How about you put your goal? He goes, yeah, let's make it more interesting. And Klaus is like, that's all the money I've got. So even if he is cheating, he's not cheating very well because he's all in. And then Ben says to him, which no one can hear but Klaus, is bluffing. So he goes, all right, I'll put that in, but you got to put the keys to your truck in. So they do that. And then it turns out that Ben has fucked him over. He actually did have something. He had a full house.
Yeah.
So, but Klaus grabs the keys anyway and goes to run. The guy goes, hey, you got sticky fingers? And he says, yeah, bad IBS. It's real bad being me or something like that.
So Klaus is kind of ready for a fight there, but Ben refuses to help him. He's just like, yeah, we're going to take you down. And then Ben's like, no, you're on your own.
Didn't you notice something happened there? Like Ben became sort of blue visible for a second. And it looked like the other gambler saw him.
Yeah, so I think that was Klaus trying to bring him into the physical realm. And then Ben's like, no, nah, I'm out of here.
That wasn't enough to freak out the other guys. They were still just like, huh? Or did they not see him? It looked to me like they saw him, but weren't really freaked out as they should be.
It feels like Klaus and Ben are kind of combined. They make a superhero at the moment, because I guess Klaus is at least not right at this moment, not able to just bring up some corpses to help himself out. He's still reliant on Ben to do the ass whooping. Anyway, so they run off. They steal the truck.
Yeah, and they're on the run.
So Allison seems to be going well. She's checked up with a guy and they're married. They've been married for a while. They're coming up to an anniversary.
Must
so
be 1 year, but they must have got married pretty quick, right? Because
So Allison landed in 61.
So I guess, maybe they
so
met.
So this is 2 years
they
later.
They might have met very quickly, dated for a year and then got married. People used to get married pretty quickly, I think, back in the day. But either way, they got married pretty quickly, but they seem like a good couple. They seem very happy. His name is Raymond, I think. And they're fighting against segregation and racism in the US.
Yeah.
And he's excited that they got mentioned in the papers that day. So he's home and says, check it out, paragraph 2, line 3, or something like that. Fun. And then they're looking to have a peaceful protest of some sort.
They're organizing a sit-in.
Maybe
wait
for
so
when JFK's
sort of,
coming to town?
That would make sense.
They're meeting at...
it's a barbershop.
A barbershop, yeah. And they're meeting with other people from the community about what they're going to do. And they're saying, no matter what, we can't afford any violence or any disrespect or anything at all. It needs to be just all very spot on in whatever way they're talking about.
Yeah.
But then this asshole knocks on the front door just to be an asshole, clearly.
Yeah. Is he an authority or something?
I think this is just showing how in the 60s, you know, even more so, you could just be that open where this white businessman comes in and goes, "What are you guys doing here? Hey, this is our shop. What's it got to do with you?"
You can't just have black people meeting together of an evening. That's not allowed.
And he said, he's like, "Well, I own some business around this area. I like it to be quiet." And then Allison comes to the door and says, "Well, lucky this isn't your building," or something like that. And he says, "Yet." What a weird threat. So they're like, "Anyway, thanks for stopping by." And then he shoves his door, a foot in the door as they try and close it. And he goes to Raymond, you just slammed that door on my foot on purpose. Like he was trying to, it was like he was trying to get a free haircut or something.
Yeah.
Allison, obviously she couldn't take any more of his shit. So she grabbed his arm, bent it backwards and kicked him out onto the street. Embarrassing him. Yeah. There's a few people hanging out, having a bit of a laugh at him. People inside the meeting didn't look quite so happy because they'd just been talking about
the non-violent approach.
But yeah, so you go, it's like you're kind of hoping that this was just a sweet moment where this asshole got his comeuppance and not, is this going to have a consequence later? We don't know yet. Yeah.
I imagine
he'll get a second comeuppance if that does. Which is something to look forward to, I guess. He was like, "Oh man, that guy sucks so much."
we'll see around this time that Luther is boxing. He's doing some boxing. All right,
this is my turn to notice some sort. This felt like not the Terminator 2, but this felt like a real X-Men scene where Wolverine was, I think maybe in the first X-Men film, Hugh Jackman's Wolverine was fighting like in an underground boxing thing where he'd basically let the guy seem like they're a chance for a while and then finish him off and sort of rigged fighting, basically. And that was exactly what Luther was doing as well.
He was putting on a show, getting
beaten a bit, and then he looked out in the crowd and a guy nodded and then he took the guy down and broke his arm because the guy pulled a knife, actually. But it's wild that anyone would take on Luther. He's off now. Like, he's not even hiding. It's like, why is anyone thinking they could fight this guy? He's an ape man.
Yeah.
And because Pogo's gone, he's the only thing allowing us to keep doing the show on primates. Although Pogo did narrate. So there's a chimp butler narrator.
Still there in spirit. So that's a bit of fun. And he wins some money and then gives some money to a guy.
Yeah, so it feels like he's working for some sort of underground crime thing.
Yeah, so we see a little bit more of that later. We see a bit more of Vanya kind of bonding with the woman of the family, Sissy, I think her name is. I think from this conversation, so Sissy's talking about leaving her husband. Is that what is going on here?
Yeah.
This guy, Carl.
Who just seems like a real, just a loser kind of. But not really a loser, probably from the outside is seen as like a real slick, successful guy. You know what I mean? He's a loser, but he's kind of a winner as well.
I wonder if, maybe I'm just sus on this guy, but because in the previous scene we saw, he was like, he'd come home for dinner or whatever and then was ducking back out to work late again.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he's cheating on Sissy.
I'm pretty sure we see him.
Oh, do we?
Luther's place of business, don't we? He's just out partying.
Oh, well, there you go.
Didn't we see him? He was the one who was giving trouble to, you remember? So after this, Luther's at, he's working as sort of security at a strip club.
Yeah.
And do you remember when?
Is that the same guy?
He's chatting to someone who works there and she goes, And it's pretty quiet, just waiting for the big tippers. And he says, should we be worried about this guy who's chatting to Miss the boss? And they're like, not at the moment. But I'm pretty sure that was the guy.
Yeah,
he was
right.
Drunk,
okay, I didn't notice
drunk
that.
And just talking to the underground boss.
Right. So working late means out of the club, yeah. Basically.
Being a drunken pest. And then I think she was like a cigarette salesperson in that. Is that what she was doing? She's going around with a tray, or maybe she was a waitress.
Yeah.
And she goes, I'm less worried about that drunken pest who's basically Vanya's host. I'm not worried about it. I'm worried about the boy down there in the front row. Yeah. And he's in his school uniform, as always. It's Five. And then Luther goes up to talk to him for a bit. And Five tells Luther that the end of the world's coming. And we expect Luther to be like, all right, let's get the team back together. But he goes, I couldn't give less of a shit.
But I don't blame him. It is a bit like, well, this again? Like, it's, you know, it is the same thing that happened last time Five rocked up. Like, that's not what you want to hear.
I'm just keeping my life together. Leave me alone.
He's doing fine.
Yeah.
There's a scene, we've just skipped over a scene with Diego again. We see him in his padded cell because obviously it didn't go down so well after Five's visit. And the music there, a cover of Crazy by Gnarls Barkley plays.
Oh, yeah, there's more songs in this than first season. I reckon they realised that people enjoyed the soundtrack a bit, so they squeeze in a lot more songs. Previous to this, we already had Right Back to Where We Started From by Maxine Nightingale at the start of the episode, which is...
They love a literal, literal song choice.
Literal stuff. Then they had My Way by Frank Sinatra, Trying by Fran Powers, I Wonder What the Future Holds for Me, Glenn Snow, another kind of literal one, Rocket Fuel by DJ Shadow. You're a DJ Shadow fan, aren't you?
Yeah, that's DJ Shadow and De La Soul, I think. That's a great song. I love that song.
And then we heard, the Crazy cover by Daniela Andrade.
Another great song. And so Diego's in a padded cell. He manages to undo his straitjacket. He's got a concealed pen and he's able to use that to pick the lock, I guess, and escape from
his cell. To get out of his straitjacket, he has to dislocate his shoulder. Super painful looking.
Yeah.
Pretty brutal. So he's...
Is that how Houdini used to do it?
Yeah, maybe. But I think if Houdini did it, I think he was double jointed or something. Like Diego had to rip his arm out of its socket and it looked very painful. So he escaped and that was quite a big thing. He alarms went off and all of a sudden the blonde guys were back from the start.
Yeah, so one of the blonde guys, he sort of... This feels totally unnecessary to me, but one of the blonde guys... He comes in dressed as a milkman and delivers some milk and to the warden or the guard or whatever and the guy's like, a little late for milk, isn't it? And then the guy pulls out a shotgun and shoots him. What was the point of that?
Yeah, it's
like, why don't you just walk in and shoot him?
It feels like these three blonde guys just feel like they're aliens in human form or something. Don't there's something about it just doesn't seem right. And it felt like that was them trying to, like, any human would know that is an awful disguise for a nighttime break-in. There's something weird about them, like but I also assume they're from the commission.
Well, yeah, I wonder that as well, although we haven't seen anyone like them from the, like, we've seen commission thugs before in different forms, but we haven't seen anyone like that. So... obviously we don't know where they're from at this stage, but they are certainly bent on, I suppose on killing the
because they went after people. Five at the start, and now they're going after Diego, so that makes sense. And they also the other thing I thought maybe they're something to do with the Soviet Union. They're blonde. I'm not sure why I thought that.
Yeah, they're sort of Aryan, aren't they? There's that. That could be that.
But is the Russians Aryan? That was more Nazi stuff.
Oh, no, that was a German thing. That was a Nazi thing.
They were on other separate sides.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not sure why I thought that. But I don't know. They just had it. There's something different about them. And I'm not sure what it is. But I feel like if yeah. they're humans, they're superhumans, and yeah, I don't think aliens exist in this world, so it's probably not aliens, but something. It feels yeah. like they're and like a. I'm guessing they're like a special squad from the commission.
Yeah, because the commission feel like they're not 100% in touch with reality anyway, so that could be
right.
a bit of a reason why they're not quite fitting
yeah,
in, you know.
Yeah, think that a milkman is a good costume or disguise. Or the other thing they could be is they could be from the Soviet Union, but they might be some of the other superhero kids.
Yeah. But also there's not – I don't think we've seen any indication that they have any powers at this stage. They've just got guns.
No.
Guns blazing.
That's true. Yeah, they wouldn't – why would they be using guns if they had superpowers?
Well, I mean, then like Hazel and Cha-Cha are – some they seem kind of superhuman in that they're they yeah. seem like a pretty even match with the Umbrella Academy Luther. People yeah. And they still use guns. I don't know, there lots of guessing to yeah. be done here. I think,
well, I guess that's, I mean, these are the they've set up a bunch of questions, which yeah. is what makes a show like this interesting, and then they'll slowly reveal all the info to us. But a new character helps Diego out. We met her in the opening scene where he was in therapy.
Yeah.
Her name is Leela. Leela Pitts, played by Ritu Arya.
She seems fun.
Yeah, she seems, you get the feeling, assuming she's going to be hanging around, but because she is listed in the, under starring, so yeah, I assume right. she's a recurring character. She's, and she's got a British accent.
Mm.
So it's interesting that, yeah, so as opposed to Klaus, who could have easily been English because yeah. the kids were born all around the world, they got him to speak with an American accent.
Yeah, although he was raised from a baby in America, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. Sorry, that was silly.
Well,
very good point. But Hargraves has an English accent, doesn't he? The dad Hargraves.
Good point.
Sort of.
Yeah, so Reggie.
Often accents, accents that really stand out to me are Australian accents.
Yeah.
In American shows.
Totally.
But American and English ones kind of aren't that noticeable. But for some reason, Leela's one is pretty, seems to stand out a bit.
Yeah, totally. It's, yeah, pretty pronounced, I guess. Yeah, she's a bit of fun. So she, so Diego is basically, he's sort of escaping separately to all these, the weirdos arriving. Leela helps him escape, pops his shoulder back in,
yeah.
And knocks out a guard to sort of help him. And so there, she's like, "I'm coming with you. You're not the only one bloody escaping out of this place." And then of course they encounter the gun wielding trio. There's a cool sort of, you know, action scene as there tends to be. To the music of "Coming Home, Baby" by Mel Torme. It's a great song. I like it a lot.
Yeah, which in Australia is there was a sitcom that ran for a few seasons called Upper Middle Bogan, and that was the theme song from that.
Yeah, right. See, I didn't even know that. I only knew that song because there's a DJ producer named Ski Whiff, who's great, and he has a version of "Coming Home, Baby," which is great.
Right. Do you know what Mel Tomei's nickname was?
No. What was it?
The Velvet Fog.
Ah, that's a
pretty fun nickname.
That's interesting.
The Velvet Fog.
I wonder what was foggy about him.
I think it's. I imagine that's about his voice, right? It just sort of.
It washes
a
over
fog
you.
Fog is sort of all encompassing, and velvet is smooth. That's what I was assuming.
He's.
He really fills a room with his energy.
He's got a great voice. It's sort of like
Fog does.
Yeah, he's kind of like a Sinatra-esque sort of a
crooner.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the word. So that all happens. They manage to give these guys the slip, and get away. And then there's the scene. The end scene is the one with Luther and Five, and Luther basically going, "I don't care. The world is ending." get out of here. So, yeah, I mean...
And then the final song is "You Only Want Me When You're Lonely" by Jim Boyd. So they're able to go into more of a, I guess they lean in even further with some of these 60s vibes, because a lot of these songs, not all of them are from the 60s, but a lot of them are more of that old school style.
It's yeah. Great episode. So much happens.
I reckon it's one of my favorite episodes yet.
Yeah.
And I love that it was in the 60s. You know, we were talking about where it might be.
Yeah.
So stoked. I think this is, I mean, the show obviously already loved the 60s because they just had little nods to in the first season anyway. Mm. So it fully made sense that that's where they would go. And then the JFK thing to give them a reason to be there.
Yeah.
But I wonder, why is this, is it coincidence and is his, when he zapped him to the past, it was just wherever the energy took him?
Mm.
Or is this where the commission wants them? Or something else? Is this fate? Or, yeah, are there other powers at play? These blonde guys, did they somehow draw him there?
Yeah, lots of questions. And also, I guess this is a place that, or a time that Five has been before as well, because he, you know, was tasked with preventing the
preventing or making sure it's, no, I think it was making sure it still happened.
Yeah, right. Because okay.
They're all about keeping history as it was.
Yeah.
So I assume it was, yeah, he was there when he was working for the commission to make sure that JFK died. And yeah, maybe it was just he'd already, because I don't know how this time travel stuff works. If he's like blasting a path each time he does it, like some sort of physical thing through time.
Yeah.
And if that was the case, it was maybe just the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
It was just like he redialed or something on a phone call.
I mean, I wonder if Five was taking down Diego when he was working for the commission. I wonder if these things overlap and interact, or whether this is kind of like just a separate timeline.
So they're all
alternate dimension, you know.
Sometimes, yeah, I mean, I love it when things all come together like that in a way, but then that also means that it's like, oh, so everything they did the whole way along was always going to happen. There's something kind of hollow about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of nice for things to sort of come back again, but sometimes it just feels like they're being a little bit too clever or
too neat,
yeah,
and tidy. And then you're like, oh, so you're saying that it's just fate that that was always going to happen? Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, I really liked this episode a lot. I think they turned it up on special effects. A lot of cash was spent in that opening scene, superhero scene when they. When Five got to Dallas.
Yeah. It's great.
Great shots there.
We've seen so little of them kind of in action as a squad of crime fighters or, you know, saving the world sort of thing. So that was a bit of a treat. And it feels
there's a lot of great shots. I really love this shot of, I think, Diego coming to in the padded cell. They started up real close on his eye, darting around, and then pulled back. So that was real nice shot as well. Just, yeah, it's just a very pretty show.
Yeah. It feels like this, aside from the world ending soon, it kind of feels nice for some of them. Like, it feels like an opportunity to have a new beginning and start a new life for people like Luther and Allison. Allison seems
maybe
quite
happy.
Maybe
even Vanya?
And, yeah, I think Vanya as well, potentially. We don't know whether she's... If she genuinely has memory loss, then I mean, I guess it is her starting a new life because, I mean, she knows her name. So that's an interesting one.
Does she know her name?
Well, they call her Vanya. So unless they have some other way of.
I wonder if she was, maybe she had her ID.
Yeah, she had her wallet.
That would have a use by date on it, which would have been confusing.
Her use by date?
Well, you know, a license, what do you call it?
Oh, an expiry.
Expiry date.
So you meant like a birthday, but.
My head's still in the milkman.
Yeah. But Vanya seems happy and Luther is, he's working as, I guess, a bodyguard or a security guard or some sort of, you know, he's working, he's making money, he's making a life for himself.
Really with Vanya, we've never seen her super happy. The happiest she got was when Peabody was sort of being, acting like a good boyfriend briefly.
Yeah, yeah.
Before and after that, she was pretty miserable.
Totally. She had a miserable childhood and...
This really is a chance for her to have a second chance
if she's forgotten her siblings, then she doesn't have that burden of you know, feeling less than them and kind of all the anger around that. It feels like a better place for them all to be, except for, of course, Diego, who's not in a great place right now.
But he's got purpose.
Yeah, and he's got a new friend, and he's escaped.
Yeah.
So maybe he's fine. Yep.
I feel like this is wherever he was, this is the kind of life he's living. He's going to be in and out of jail.
Yeah, he's going to be a vigilante no matter where he is.
Whatever time or place he's in. So, I think you're kind of right. And I think, yet again, Five coming along with this. If it happens, because basically what we figured out in the first season was, if they didn't try to stop the apocalypse wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So is it going to be the same again, that they're just bringing it on by him trying to stop it? Although he wasn't even there this first time when it happened.
Yes, that's a good point.
Although that was true the first time around as well.
That's right.
So maybe I need to think more about
that. Was he? But he must have been.
He time jumped it, remember?
You mean he jumped after it?
Yeah, he jumped till after.
But when it actually happened, he was there. But we don't know. We don't know exactly how it happened the first time.
But we do know that he jumped through that time, so he didn't exist in it. He'd space jumped through it, remember? He was walking down the street and he jumped past it. That's why he survived.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay, fuck, time is complicated. Yeah, interesting. He made no difference, to the end
result,
I guess.
Yeah, so he came back to try and stop it and it happened somewhat similarly.
Yeah.
Or, no, hang on. It's funny that we still haven't really got an answer in season one. But so he, remember, because what he thought was the apocalypse was just the rubble of the Umbrella Academy, and that the actual apocalypse didn't happen until the next day.
What? Surely not.
But then he was there for that. Oh. But no, that's what they said, remember, because on the last episode, or the second last episode, Fanya blew up the thing, and then it wasn't until the next day when the moon exploded.
Yeah, but, I mean, both of those things had happened. No, hang on. Yeah, right. So when he was in the future in the apocalypse, he thought it was the apocalypse even though just the academy had been destroyed?
Yeah.
He'd walk down the street a little bit and go, hang on a minute, is the rest
everything else is?
Oh, fuck, I don't know.
That's confusing.
Look, if anyone knows,
obviously it's clear, like a multi-million dollar TV show, they figure out all this stuff, but
yeah,
it just hasn't, I mean, it doesn't matter that much, and that's why we didn't worry about it the first time around, but I obviously didn't even think about those things the first time around.
Yeah.
Anyway, be interesting to see. I'm all the way in on this already, season two. Loving it. Everyone's just firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Vanya is sort of, I mean, her storylines are always sort of the kind of the bummer ones, really, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess so.
But this one, she's got a cool, her housemate's kind of cool.
I hope she gets a more positive plotline.
But we see her in 10 days' time, she's flying through the air, moving missiles with her mind.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking at the end of what I was thinking at the end of this episode is that there's a lot of personal development going on between where they are now and where we've just seen that they get to in 10 days.
Yeah.
Like they go from obviously not caring that the world is ending to not being in contact with each other, not really using their powers really much, except maybe Klaus doing a bit of a sneaky
and probably
poker game or whatever. And probably, Diego doing a bit of sneaky stuff too. But they go from that to basically being a crime-fighting force. Not crime-fighting, I keep saying that. They're saving the world, basically, of fighting a war in just 10 days, which is pretty... even the idea that a war could advance to that stage in 10 days is pretty nuts.
Yeah, it's like everyone's living as if there's no huge war that's coming.
Yeah. But obviously there's something to do with these three goons that are trying to take him down. I suppose would have something to do with that, but possibly not even. Who knows?
Yeah, how do huge Russian armies or Soviet armies get to the United States in this 10-day period? If, I mean, maybe the American government's aware of them coming.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe something's going on that we just don't know about. But yeah, that's interesting. Anyway, I'm looking forward to episode 2. We'll find out more next week. Let's go to a few listener messages. If you've got any messages or questions you want to send through, there's a link in the show notes. Click on that. And you can either select which specific episode you want me to read out the message on, or you can just write a general message. This one comes from late last season. This is from Grant in Ontario. He was one who wrote to us about the motel in Canada, which is from...
Well, I mean, he lives where they film the show.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's what he said. He said he wanted to confirm that Schitt's Creek was also filmed at the same location, which I think we mentioned maybe...
Yeah.
In that episode. And he said he was driving by there today and there were a lot of people pulled over taking selfies in front of it.
Of course.
It was rather dangerous, actually, as the road isn't very wide. I had to drive on the wrong side of the road to avoid running down tourists. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Grant.
If I'm honest, I think I would probably also do that.
Certainly be stopping for a photo there.
Yeah, that's the motel from the scene in the first season of Umbrella Academy.
Yeah. And also an NBA player lived there for a couple of years as well.
Yeah, interesting, eh?
From the Denver Nuggets, I think.
Living in a motel.
All right, well, and we've got four messages specific to this episode, season two, episode one. So get through these. I think we got a few minutes, Evo.
Sure.
This one comes from Gary J from the UK. And Gary writes, just wondering, how good did you think the special effects were when the Academy was taking on the armies?
There you go. You commented on it. Well,
Gary, I loved it. I thought it was so good. I'm like, it was blockbuster movie quality. Or is that what it felt like? Because I was expecting Netflix web series quality.
Well,
it was...
look, Netflix puts money into things. I think maybe we just I don't know if the special effects weren't bad in the first season. Maybe they just weren't going all out. I don't know. It seemed about the same, or maybe I wasn't paying that much attention. But
maybe it was just there were more in a row here, and they were just bigger. And
yeah, it was a just big like, action sequence.
Because they kept revealing all the characters in superhero mode, which made it more exciting somehow.
Yeah, really cool scene.
Gary goes on to say, in Five's jump to the past, which was the future of the past the rest of the family was in. Sorry if that time talk is confusing.
Yep.
I think I got it right. Anyway, I thought it was some of the best telly effects I've seen on telly. I agree, Gary. I thought it was amazing. Evan, you know more about this sort of stuff. What do you reckon? You reckon it didn't really grab your attention by the sounds of it?
Well, I mean, it did. It looked cool, but it didn't. I don't think I've ever been like disappointed. The special effects have never really jumped out to me as either good or bad, or you know, haven't jumped out to me as bad. Which probably means they're good. you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, you know it when they're bad. Like, did you watch The Flash with me? And there was Gorilla Grodd. There was like a gorilla army, and it looked like there was about 14 gorillas, and it all looked like, you know, old screensaver sort of graphics.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I guess it's just whatever the budget is. And I just had the thought that they've saved on the Pogo CGI.
Oh,
that
would
have been where
point.
They dumped all their money last time, and they don't have that this time.
I'm just having another look at it now. No, it does look cool. It's a lot of slow motion.
Yeah, the bit where 3D Five stuff. Is surprised by the missile being blasted behind him.
Yeah.
And it all slows down.
It's all one continuous shot. It's cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah, okay.
I thought it was sick.
I didn't appreciate it the first time around, but it is.
Honestly, it would have been embarrassing. I mean, either way, but it would have been embarrassing to have seen me how excited I was in the bath. Whoa. one of the many reasons I have tape over the webcam of my computer as I'm watching shows in the bath. I'm so paranoid about Mark Zuckerberg just eating popcorn and watching me.
Seeing how excited you get when the explosions happen.
great message. Thank you, Gary J. Next one comes from Ali McLaughlin from Toronto. She says, in Canada, your Commonwealth cousins. Yes, Australia and Canada, two very proud members of the Queen's Commonwealth. Ali writes, loving your recaps, despite your lack of knowledge of MCR, My Chemical Romance's very own Gerard Way. Thank you. I'm getting it right now. If that makes it any better, Ali. Hey, Ali, big fan of the Black Parade, the song. I think that might be one of only three of their songs that I know. I think that's a really good song.
It is a good song.
I'd call that a rousing banger.
Yeah. It's on your rousing playlist.
It is on my rousing playlist, yeah. Got a playlist full of rousing songs, which is a kind of song that is... only maybe the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, I can't remember how long ago, but my dad once called me up and he goes, Matt, I just saw a song on one of the video hits shows or whatever. He was watching music clips on TV and he's like, it's like an army playing, there's like a marching drum, he's like, it's just a really rousing song. He's trying to explain what it is to me so I can tell him what the song is.
Oh right.
And it took us ages to figure out it was a song by Fun.
Oh,
I can't remember. They're not their big hit, but their other one,
I assumed it was the Black Parade.
No, it wasn't the Black Parade, but then I'm like, Dad, if you think that's rousing, check out the Black Parade. Maybe I'm confusing anything with a marching drum, because I think the Black Parade has one as well.
They're a rousing instrument.
Oh, what a rousing instrument. I guess that's why they armies use them. They're rousing up the troops.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Ali writes, I was wondering, oh, hang on. I think the rest of that question might be a slight spoiler because it doesn't make sense to me. So I won't ask you that, Evan. Maybe I'll come back to that, Ali, unless it's not meant to make sense. But just in case, it just has a slight tinge of spoiler about it. And someone did say that I accidentally spoiled a couple of things in early episodes of season one, which I'm going to try very hard not to do this time around, which is going to be easier because I don't think I've seen any more episodes, so
yeah, right,
would be very difficult to do. But first time around, I apparently let something slip early, which you didn't notice, so it couldn't have been anything crazy. But anyway, thank you, Ali. I'll come back to that second part of the question maybe next week or whenever that comes up. Daniel from Glasgow writes, hello Matt and Evan, hope you're doing well. As we find out at the start of season two, the team gets stranded throughout the 60s. My question is, if you were time traveling into the past to escape an apocalypse, or maybe the semi-apocalypse we're currently in, which decade would you like to get stuck in? And Daniel has done the thing you've requested, Evan, and he's gone on to answer his own question. But let's get your answer.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm nostalgic for the 90s, but that's because I grew up in the 90s. I think that's tricky. I feel like I really like technology, so I don't think I'd want to go way back to before there was much technology. I feel like I'd still want to be kind of 80s, maybe. 80s would be fun. That'd be a real...
80s sort of has got that funny feeling of being futuristic. It's like...
Yeah.
There was such a... I don't know why, but there were a lot of future... Were they a bit obsessed with the future in the 80s?
Yeah, maybe.
I guess that's when Back to the Future and stuff like that were from. So there's something about the 80s seems futuristic to me in a real weird way.
Well, it was big for technology, like computers and video games, CDs, and that sort of stuff. Yeah, music. You know, synthesize, like a lot of these things were really breaking through.
Right.
Lots of like really genuinely new stuff. I don't know. I'd go back to the 80s, I reckon.
That's the thing that trips me up because I'm like, oh, I'd love to go back to the 60s for the music and stuff. But then you see Alice and And you're like, oh, man, right. He's going backwards for equality.
Yeah, social stuff.
And that would be so brutal to live through. I mean, yep. As a white man, obviously, I wouldn't be so directly affected. But still, and then other things like medicine and all that goes backwards. So you're like, I mean, you could go back to a time before AIDS and stuff like that, but you also go back to a time before, you know, modern dentistry and other stuff like that. So,
yep.
And all sorts of other things, knowing more, you know, life expectancy was shorter and whatever. So, I mean, that's taking all the fun out of it. If you were just asking me in a way that's more positive and not to think of the monkey paw scenario where everything turns out bad. But I would say, I guess the 60s would be really cool because there was a lot going on there in terms of, I mean, there was also leaps forward there in terms of movements for striving for equality and
I think
music, rock and roll was coming on and all that sort of stuff. So
it would maybe also, the 60s. It would also be great or better if you didn't know, I don't know if this is part of the thing, but whether or not you remember, you know, what things are like in the future. Like if you don't know that, you know, we know medical science is better in the future.
Yeah,
we just live with what we've got. It's just,
comparatively, our doctors suck now.
Yeah.
Compared to in 30 years' time.
It's like leeches and stuff.
Yeah, they're going to be like, oh, you use needles? We use leeches again now. yeah, okay. Well, let's see what Daniel says. Daniel says, for me, I wouldn't mind the 80s, as I've seen loads of movies and TV shows set then, and I wouldn't be too out of my depth for knowing what was going on. Oh, that's smart. So that's really, you're just looking at a survival technique. Well, I guess that's his point, is we're going back to avoid the apocalypse. So you want to go a little way back. If you go back,
that's right.
Unless you're trying to stop it.
Yeah, that's a good point. You want to go far enough back that you'll die before the apocalypse happens, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, I should be dead. 1960. That's 60 years back. I don't think I've got much more than 60 years left in me.
Maybe
a little more.
Focus on having fun and living a good life. You know, you'll probably won't live as long, but you'll live better.
I did. Right? I mean, I caught. My memories of the 80s are very, very vague. So that would be a fun decade to live through as an adult, I think.
Yeah.
So I think the 80s would be cool as well. So maybe actually, and if you're going to be there, Evan, let's go to the 80s.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll go together.
That sounds good. And we'll meet Daniel there.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, probably just got time for one more. And this one, there's plenty more in here we'll get to in future episodes. But feel free to add more questions in. But this one is from Sean in Cape Town. And Sean writes, hey, Matt and Evan, excited to go through season 2 of Umbrella Academy with you guys. Being thrust back into the 60s, like in the show, would be crazy and scary. But what would you be most excited about if it happened to you? It could probably catch a live Beatles performance if you get in early.
Oh, yeah.
Love all your pods, Matt, and Gamey Game is a blast. See you later. Thanks, Sean. That was a lovely message. Yeah, I think I'm a bit of a Beatles fan. I'm a real dark horse like that. pretty unique sort of character. I'd love to go see, you know, Beatles and a million other old bands. Very cool. Old blues acts, and I guess it depends on where you land. If we stayed in Melbourne, the Beatles did come here, but apparently you could not hear them
for all the crowd noise.
Just absolutely squealing. They played the same venue that I saw Pantera play at.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What venue?
The Festival Hall. I don't know why I put it that at the start. Festival Hall.
Yeah, that's cool. So what was the question? What would we be most excited about doing?
I tell you one thing that would be right at the top of my list. 1966, I would get to the AFL Grand Final, VFL at that point, and watch the Mighty Saints win their one and only. I might be able to tell a few things about where football's going and give the Saints a few advantages. Maybe turn them into an empire.
Oh, it'd be cool to go hang out at NASA. Sort of witness the moon landing up close. Would be pretty cool.
Oh, like on the moon?
Maybe.
You could get in there early and go and just undercut Neil Armstrong to the bosses. Oh, so that Neil Armstrong guy's drunk again. Spike his tea.
I think I could sneak in, get some entry level job at NASA, and then it'd be cool to, you know, weasel my way into the control room there or something, and be part of history. I don't know what else happened in the 60s. Woodstock,
Summer of Love. Yeah, I'd pop in a Woodstock, I reckon, even though it sounds like it was a bit of a nightmare. Oh yeah. Free drugs, free love.
Drugs were good then, right?
Yeah, I think it was all pretty good. all that sort of stuff.
Color television?
Oh, I would absolutely see if I could find some color television.
The TV industry would have been pretty interesting around
then.
Did
color TV come in the 60s? I think it didn't make it to Australia to the 70s.
I don't think TV made it to Australia until, was it maybe 56?
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously black and white then. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure when color TV came in, generally speaking.
It'd be cool to I'd love to go see just go to places I know now and see what they used to look like. Like the suburb that I could go meet my dad as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. And my grandparents when they were, younger than I am now.
Yeah.
Or a bit around my age. That would be pretty interesting.
That'd be trippy.
Yeah,
messing with the timeline though, with the video, the butterfly effect.
Make myself not exist. Yeah, yeah, I'd want some assurances about that. But if I could get away with it, and I obviously wouldn't be like, "Hey, I'm your grandson." I'd just be like, "Hey, nice to meet you, sir." I mean, friend. I mean, equal. I'd be real smooth.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
The name's Tree Pavement.
Tree Pavement. Yeah, that's good. Anyway, we should wrap this up. That was fun. I'm looking forward to the next 9 episodes of this season, getting back in the bath and really lapping it up. Thanks for joining, Seven. People should check you out Saturday mornings on Twitch. You're teaching me how to do Twitch. I'm going to Twitch something sometime soon.
Yeah.
If you follow me.
It's all the rage. All the kids are doing it.
I'm Twitch, whatever it is,
Twitch.tv.
Twitch.tv/MattStewartComedy if you want to follow me there and see what I do. Or if you want to give me a suggestion, maybe that's something you can write in the messages here. What's something Evan and I could stream? Last week we did it while Evan played an ape-related game called Ancestry.
You remember? Ancestors, yeah. Ancestors. The Humankind Odyssey. Mm. It was a bit baffling, but it was fun to play.
Yes. Please check out my other podcast, Do Go On. We're in the middle of Block at the moment, Blocktoberfest, Blocktober Grace period. It's a big time of year, the month where we do the most requested topics. We've already done O.J. Simpson trial and the Donner Party this week. They're the 5th and 4th most requested and voted for topics.
Yeah.
So the next 3 weeks are going to be even more popular than that. They're all absolute bangers. So check them out, please. And I'm also doing a podcast about music called Listen Our Pod. Funnily enough, about 80s albums. And the most recent one was about The Clash's Combat Rock, which was their big selling one with Should I Stay or Should I Go and Rock the Casbah. Yeah. And the track Straight to Hell, which MIA sampled for Paper Planes.
Mm.
Banging. That's a real low-key banger, but great tune. Anyway, that's all the time we've got time for. I've said that 4 or 5 times. Thanks so much for joining us, Evan. And as we always say here at Primates Podcast,
Chimpan, see you later.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.